Okay, let's call this meeting to order on April 15th, 2026. Let's start with the pledge of allegiance. Mitch, would you lead us in that?
Certainly, yeah. Pledge.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Vernon, can you hear us? He's like looking at us like he can't, so.
That's because I didn't.
There we go.
Can you hear us now, Vernon?
Now he's on you.
Good.
Okay, are there any public comments? Motion to accept the agenda.
I move we accept the agenda as presented.
I'd second that.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Everybody in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, we have
Can you mute him?
Couple of
You gotta, sir, you're skipping.
You need to approve the minutes.
We gotta approve the minutes.
Oh, approval of the minutes of the previous meeting. Looking for a motion.
I'll make that motion.
Second.
Okay, we got a motion, a second. Everybody in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Okay, any opposed? Now the chair's report. Right, Becky?
Yes, sir.
And this is
Sure.
This is a very important, momentous occasion. Gonna present Mr. Rich Jones. Do you want us to be somewhere?
Can you go next to the flag, please?
Down by the flag.
Can you get all three of us? Because you could just do two of us.
No, I
can't. Okay.
I gotta hold it.
Okay. Okay.
Can we scooch a little towards the flag? Thank you.
Board credential certificate.
Whoops, I cut off Richard's head, sorry.
Yeah,
thank you.
No one will miss it.
That's different.
Certificate of appreciation to Overton Power District from the City of Mesquite.
Thank you.
For their support of the annual Veterans Day Parade.
Very good.
Okay.
Congratulations, Rich. That was good.
I'm not as fat.
Get on, Rich.
All right, very good. All right, anything else on the, we need, we're good? All right, the attorney's report.
I've got lots we're gonna end up discussing later in the board meeting, so, but if there's any, so I don't have anything for my report unless there's anyone that's got questions for me.
Okay. All right, Ms. Melissa, manager reports.
Thank you. We are going to start with safety first, and today I will introduce to you, I'm not sure that all of you guys have met, Cody Hardy is filling in for Kyle as he is gone to the NRECA Safety Summit. So Cody will be doing the report today, and we're excited to have him here.
All right, Cody.
We'll see if I'm excited here in a minute. Start off, talk about some of the jobs we've been doing. Mesquite's been working on the Painted Hill sub just right out the door here. There's some pictures of them working on that new bay. They had to string that conductor off the 69 line to energize that bay. I think it's supposed to be energized next month, right, is what we're looking for loads. Just kind of a couple pictures. They're also been pulling some conductor and some new subdivisions in Pulte. It's continued to grow out there. At Overton, we've been doing a single phase overhead line extension. If you're dropping off the Mesa, there's all the towers up on the right-hand side. We had to move the transformer closer for and put a bigger transformer in there for more services that are coming in. So that's been kind of a challenging one just because of the hard ground and rough terrain, but it's been a good project. This day, we were actually, it was extremely windy. It was like 2 weeks ago, and the wind was blowing our cover up off the line. It was a fun project, but the guys have been learning a lot, working hard. Both valleys have been working on tagging with our new PC numbers to help with our identifying cables as we continue to work on our underground cables. Our outages, we only had one unplanned outage in the last month. It was in Warm Springs. We've had a lot of wind lately, and it was caused by the wind. A jumper broke. It was just two homes. Even our planned outages, have been very minimal. Just a lot of the other projects we've been doing haven't required too many outages, so that's good to see as well. This last month in April, we had our safety meeting, and our topics were pull top rescue, bucket truck rescue, and vault rescue. It's kind of one that everybody looks forward to, but not looks forward to at the same time. We have to perform each of those topics within 4 minutes, go up in front of everybody. That's the hardest part. You got to go do it in front of everybody, climb the pole or get the guy out of the bucket. Before we went out and did the practical things out in the field, we also had a discussion. The safety committee came forward with a scenario of an outage, and it's a system-wide outage. It was a drone took out one of the transformers and tore the substation, and it was kind of a surprise to everybody to see what their jobs, their roles are in that kind of a situation. And it was a good discussion, I thought anyway. A lot of people have been in the company where we've had system-wide outages, so they kind of knew some of the things to do, but others hadn't. And then where it was like a drone, it was almost like a terrorist attack kind of a thing. Nobody really had thought, I mean, people have thought about that kind of stuff, but not really discussed. So it was a good discussion amongst the company, having the whole company there. I got some pictures of our different rescues. This is pull top rescue. You have to do it within 4 minutes. Everybody passed with flying colors. You have to, in that time, you have to get dressed, climb the pole. There's a dummy up on the pole with a rope. You climb up there, tie the rope to him, cut their strap that goes around the pole, and get him to the ground. Then you have to climb back down and touch him within that time. I think the fastest was Mr. Omar in the back. He was just over 2 minutes. It was like 2 minutes, 2 seconds, something like that. So everybody, most guys were within that 2 minutes. Maybe the slowest might have been 3.5 minutes, but like everybody did it amazingly. It's a lot of pressure having everybody watch you. It's the biggest thing, but it's also a little bit of competition as well. We also had to do bucket truck rescue. You have a guy that's up in the air like they're working, doing a job. They may come in contact. The guy on the ground that's the safety watch has to climb up on the truck, use the lower controls, lower the bucket down. You can see in the second picture, the bucket's lower down. They have to now jump off. And then third picture there, tilt the bucket forward, and you have to pull the guy out. That one, most people can do it pretty quickly. We practice with the controls every day to make sure the trucks are running good, so everybody's pretty familiar with those. And then vault rescue. You can see in the left-hand picture, the guys are standing around it. They got that tripod there. On that tripod, there's a winch system with a cable. In the middle picture, there's a stick laying there. And then we have this hook that's attached to that stick, and we'll have the cable from that tripod hooked to this, all ready to go. You see in the far right picture, the guys are down there, and they have those harnesses on that have the orange loops. Those are made to catch this hook. If something happens, we got to pull them out. It's all ready to go. You put it down there, and then once you hook it on there, you pull back like that, it latches on, and then you can crank them out of the hole. So that was good. It's a good competition, but it's also good practice for everybody to make sure everybody's doing that. It's something we do every single year to qualify. OSHA requires us to do the pull top rescue, It's only required every 2 years, but we make sure we do it every year. And then the other things, we just do more and more underground and more buckets than we do climbing. So we've found it important to practice those and implement those as well. So that's been fun.
For many years, this was a competition, right? I mean, those guys can burn up and down that pole when they want to. But when we have the kickoff meeting, all of the employees are in the room. And I remind them of the gravity of what it is that we're practicing. We're practicing to save somebody's life should they need it. And so we take that training very seriously. You can't put a group of linemen together with a timer and it not become a competition. It's just in their nature. But at the same time, it's important training. And we want not only for them to know that they can do it, we want their peers to know that they can do it so that when you go up to work, you have that security with you. So
they did you make the ladies do it too?
No, this is something else. But there was other office staff that did the bucket truck rescue and stuff, just ones that they might have to potentially go out and watch somebody out in the bucket. If they have to be out there and watch, they have to qualify to be able to do that, to do a rescue. So we make sure anybody that has the possibility, the substation guys were all there, and then Stephen Brown he did it as well. He helps out with hanging a lot of his antennas and stuff like that, so we made sure that he's qualified to be able to run those lower controls on that truck as well. So it was really good. And everybody, all the office staff comes out, watches, and they have drinks and shades popped up. We were actually supposed to do it this month, but we had that heat wave in March, and it got everybody scared, so we bumped it up a month because we didn't know what April was going to be like. Now April's been a lot cooler than March was, so it's over with now, so we're good. This last week, we had the county fair. At the fair, we had a booth with our demonstration trailer that we built. We did safety demonstrations for everybody. We tried to implement it, so it was mostly, the most shows we did were Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, when most of the hometown communities were there, people that live within our service territory. And most of the Overton crew, they all were there. We also had help from Christy, Kelly, and Becky, and then we had Leighton Woods and Shane Levitt came over from Mesquite on Saturday. We were low on numbers, but we did three shows on those 3 days, then we did two shows on the weekends, and we had great attendance from everybody. If you see in the bottom, we have our star of every show. His name's Freddie. He has a hot dog, or we do a pickle, or we do an orange that the electricity goes through, and then you see that flame right there, and it shows what electricity going through the human body will do. A couple of other pictures. It was really good because a lot of our newer employees, our apprentices, our new journeymen were able to get up and do the presentation for people and share some of their knowledge with the public. Everybody kind of took turns with it. Steve Barlow is one that headed it all up. He was there at every show. I got asked to do it like at the beginning of the year, and I said, I'm turning it over to Steve because my kids show animals, and I'm like, I'm not going to be there that much. So he did a great job. He's the one that came up with the skit and did everything and kind of lined everything up. Here's a picture. We had the bucket truck with the mannequin up in the air. We had a pad mount transformer. We talked about a lot of tree trimming, bushes, planting bushes in front. We also got a palm frond, and we'll lay it on one of the hot phases. It's running 7,200 volts, just the same as all of our server distribution lines. And so we'll put a palm frond on there and went from phase to ground on that, and show that it'll actually catch on fire. Like it starts smoke, we'll go till right before it catches on fire because we don't want a fire there. But it's really a great show. You can see this year we did something different. We have that car. We happened to find this car that somebody just happened to make it look just like it ran into a pole. I'm not going to say how, but it worked really good. And we set it up so it looked like there's a pole. Or it is a pole, but we broke it in half, put a cross arm on it. It's got wire, laid it across the car, and talked to the public about the safety of if you have down power lines, if you hit a pole and the wires are on your car, what to do. And we had a lot of good questions from the public on that topic. I think it was a very good visual for them. You can get up there and just tell them about it, but when you actually have a car sitting there and it's wrapped around a pole and there's lines, some of the guys would even get in the back of the car and show how you get out of the car, and they would jump out, and and there was a lot, there was a really good discussions on that from everybody. This is a picture, some of the newer guys. This is Mike, our new journeyman in Overton, doing the presentation. He's holding a kite in the air, talking about if kids are flying kites by power lines, tell them first, don't. Number two, if they do and it gets blown away in the wind, what to do to let go of it. The interesting part was is, let's see, yesterday we were in Moapa doing some, or actually at the reservation doing a job, and I get a picture from somebody that says, hey, there's a kite in the line. So we went and then cut the kite out of the line. Luckily, somebody let go of it. This is actually on Wednesday. It was like one of our smaller crowds. There wasn't a lot of people there. It was the very first show Wednesday. Sunday, man, we had people standing all over the place. There was a lot of good attendance there and a lot of good feedback. I talked to a guy on Sunday. He was telling me that he had come to the show. We did it 2 years ago. We didn't do it last year. But 2 years ago when we did it, his kids still talk about it. And they saw that it was on the program, and they were excited to come and watch it again. So it was good to have that kind of feedback. He was from Vegas, but they enjoyed the information and the show and to communicate. We'd answer questions. A lot of them come up and talk to us afterwards. We had a lot of people asking just about how to get into line work and different things like that. And a lot of good feedback. We handed out pamphlets and different things for the kids. That's one of the arcs coming off. We have a ladder, talking about somebody hitting the line with the ladder. That's how Freddy gets fried. And then the best part is too, is our families are all able to come and watch. Dallin, this is Dallin Levitt. He wasn't supposed to be one of the speakers at this show, but his whole family, his wife and kid and his parents and everybody showed up, and we're like, Dallin, you're leading this one. So he got to talk in front of everybody, and then I took a picture of his wife and him and his wife and his daughter. But it was good. It's good interaction for all of us to be able to get up there and to talk and share our knowledge. And I feel like you're learning more as you're up there speaking and communicating with the people. It was a good turnout. I thought we had good representation from everybody on it. And that's my presentation.
Thank you, Cody.
Great stuff.
Thank you.
Next, we will have Randall with Engineering Services.
Okay, this is on the Tortoise to Gila 138 line. The contractor is at around location, pole location, about 23. They get about 5 poles a day, so they'll be done within a week getting all the poles set up, and then there's another 3 weeks of pulling in conductors. So we're still looking at towards the end of May to have everything tied in and finished up. If you'll notice here on the right, there's the whole 3 or 4 vehicles, one of their crews had to wait while tortoises crossed, and that's why we have tortoise monitors. So this last month and this time is the active tortoise period out in where we're at. And this is why we spend $80,000 a month for monitors to protect this guy. So anyway, on the one on the left, we found one at home. And that's the coordinates of where to find him. And these tortoises use the same den usually year after year. So next year, if you guys are interested in finding a tortoise, that's the GPS coordinates to find him in his home.
I need one to...
Well, no.
But I'll leave.
Yeah, sure. Turtle soup.
Randall. Richard.
No, I don't.
Give him a full stop.
We have finished up all the testing. Everything's complete on the 69 KV bay at Tortoise. And these are... Hey, my slide got messed up, Stephen. It's your fault, you know. Anyway,
I'll take it.
So the approved budget was $5.1 million. Our total cost to date, we're at $3.8 million, with the under budget at $1.3 million. I did round those up, Jonathan, just so you know. It wasn't exact.
So, Randall, let me just ask you, we have those 320s in there. What's going to happen to those old transformers?
Well, eventually, we're going to replace those with 160. That's our plan, to replace those three with another 60 down the road.
But right now, they'll stay in operation.
They'll stay in operation, yeah.
Remember, Mr. Luttrell reminded us that they've been very well taken care of for all of this time.
Gently so. Used.
Gently
over
used.
60 years.
Yeah.
60 years.
We've also finished the ring bus up. And our approved budget was at $10.9 million, total cost to date $7.6 million, with an under budget of $3.2 million.
And you say cost to date, is that final cost?
That's final cost, yeah.
Okay.
All the testing's done. And some of the, and this one especially, that's a large number to be under budget. But when we haven't done a project like this before, we rely on the engineers and their estimates. And if they haven't done something similar like that, they throw out high numbers to us. And we don't really know exactly where we're going to be until we actually bid out the job. Typically, we always try to do our projects in the winter. We seem to get better contracting pricing in the winter. A lot of the contractors we bid to are from cold country, and so they're looking, always looking for winter work. And also tortoise monitoring. During the winter, back in Rich's day, in fact, you didn't have to have tortoise monitors in the winter because normally they're not out. But unfortunately, a few years ago, one turtle got wandering around in winter, and somebody saw it, and now we have to have tortoise monitors year-round, even though they're normally hibernating. So that costs us an extra $300,000 this year just in winter tortoise monitoring.
Fantastic.
WEC update, we submitted two more standards. We're at 44% submittal to WEC. We still have not gotten any response from them on our implementation plan or any response on what we submitted, if it's acceptable, if they have questions or anything. So we hope that happens soon so that we can get working on what they think the gap is with those.
Is that normal?
This is the first time.
It's
been 10 years.
With every government bureaucracy, yes. Yes.
And unfortunately,
we hurry and then we wait.
Unfortunately, right now, NERC and WEC are in the process of coming up with new standards. They're trying to pull more people in. So they have a huge volume of entities like us that are getting sucked into this. So they have a large quantity of people who they're trying to oversee right now. So it's a paperwork nightmare. We continue to work on internal controls, and like I mentioned before, the internal controls will help keep us on the right path to compliance in the future. That's all I have. Any questions? Thank you.
Thank you, Randall. Kevin with Substation Operations.
Okay. The metering department I haven't updated on the metering department in quite a while, so I thought I would throw this out. They've been doing residential meter testing, and what they use is this Guardian you see the picture of. And what it does is you pull the meter off, you put this Guardian in socket, put the meter back on, and then everything's done with the computer. It's all self-enclosed in that. And the same thing will record any anomalies, anything they need to record for a long period of time, like voltage. Power quality, anything like that, they use the same thing. But when they do, they go out there and they do a test on the meters and the meter base and all of that stuff, and then they do a visual inspection on it, make sure there's nothing out of the ordinary there. And they've been focusing their efforts in the Mesquite area apartment complexes this last few months, and they've found no problem so far to date. It's every 5 years they're supposed to touch every meter every 5 years. It's a pretty big task, and they're working towards that.
How long does that thing have to sit on the in line there?
It takes about 15-20 minutes.
Okay. Yeah, this thing, then you pull it back out.
Pull it back out and move.
When
it
you pull a meter, I assume that shuts the power down, so you have to let it down on stuff.
Yeah.
The 5 years of government regulation or our standard?
It's our standard.
Okay.
There is a standard, but I think it's 5 years as well. I think we just follow the standard that's out there. Mm-hmm. We just follow standard practices. This is our three-phase testing unit, and it does basically the same thing, but it's got a lot of cables and CT clamps, and they'll deploy it out in a three-phase service and test the CTs, the PTs, and all of the components that are involved in a three-phase service or an instrument-rated service. We had our Desert Southwest Automation and Protection class, and that's the one that we hold every year. We usually hold it here in the Mesquite boardroom, but it's gotten so popular, we've had to look for a different alternative site because we fill this room up and have to turn people away. And so Dixie was gracious enough to offer their training facility, which about doubled the capacity that we had. So we had quite a good showing. There was 24 to 25 individuals each day at that. And they would trade off because one day was automation, one day was protection. And so the people interested in automation would come one day and protection the other day. So we had, I think there was 9 different utilities at this. Mm-hmm. So we had a good showing.
Who are your instructors?
They are from Schweitzer Engineering Laboratories. Kevin Leach and, why can't I think of his name?
Another guy
from Schweitzer Engineering Laboratories. But
unusual name.
in this training, though, we submit the subjects we want to learn. And they take those subjects and they build a training course with those subjects. So it's quite intuitive for our guys. And the highlights, the curriculum that we studied was RTAC logic and programming, communications protocol, a DMP3 and IEC 81650, line differential protection, event analysis, and inverter-based resources. If you want me to expound on any of those, I can.
I see you say full participation of the Orton Power Substation. So yes. Everybody from your department?
Yes.
That's good.
We had 3 guys on the first day and 3 guys on the second day. So we split it up. So we weren't all there at once.
Well, Melissa, but you talk about the inverter-based protection in your report with the solar. I just wondered if we picked up, Schweitzer had given us some equipment to monitor that. So if you're going to talk about that, we'll pick it up then.
We can monitor it, but it's kind of a double-edged sword. If you trip out on every little instance they have, you're tripping out all the time. And to re-energize that, we also trip out again because we energize that tub. And so
we have relay settings in place at the interconnection site, which is Lincoln. Mm-hmm. But as we've discussed, like Kevin said, how tight do you make that? Because if it opens, it kills their entire plant, and then we have to go through the re-energization, which then typically trips off our commercial and industrial customers here in Mesquite. And so it's, how do you find that balance? Yeah. But we are going to talk about what happened.
Okay. Painted Hills Bay 4, Cody touched on this a little bit, but the substation crew has got all of the low voltage wiring complete. The high voltage bus work is 95%. They worked on it today and they got quite a bit done. Oh, I think they almost got all of it done today. The apparatus testing, they're going to be doing that next week. Commissioning and apparatus testing goes hand in hand, but the commissioning they'll be doing next week, finished grade rock, gravel road base, we'll bring that in probably after it's energized. And then engineering and drafting drawings, you know, we still got some work to do there on that. We expect to be energized by mid-May, and the estimated budget for that was $1 million, and so far we have spent, well, I estimate that it's going to cost us around $700,000 to finish the project. So we are under budget on that one as well. And then I have a question at the bottom. Can the substation crew take a break? A small one. They got a lot to do still.
The answer is no. We love you, but.
Take a drink of water, get back to work. Long Drive and Raptor, we've been doing testing and commissioning on this sub as well. And the testing and commissioning is almost done. We have stuff that needs to be done after we cut the substation over. So they're going to start cutting over tomorrow or next week, a few things. And then they've got some testing to do on that after it's cut over the other part. So they'll cut over it and test and commission and energize. And then they'll cut over the other part, test, commission, and energize. So there's quite a bit that goes on into this, into energizing these substations. And They expect to be done mid-May, but we'll see. They may be, we'll see. Tortoise substation update. We have, where's the pointer at on this thing? Does this work? Oh yeah, there we go. So the ring bus is complete, except for this breaker right here has, and I reported last month about the breaker having current transformers that are shorted out. GE is coming on site next week, and they're going to pull all of those off, replace all of them, and retest that whole breaker.
And is that the one that burned up?
This one is one that they tested at Tested Pad. Okay. The CT's Tested Pad. And so they're going to come in and warranty that unit for us, and they'll do all of the rework and rebuild it with our help, of course. But after they have that fully back and operational and tested, the ring bus will be in full operation after that. And so it's again, mid-May is our target for that. So we've got a lot of work to do before summer comes on. And we're spread pretty thin right now. The, it's on the next slide, right? Let's see. So the new 12200 MVA transformer scheduled for delivery on November 6th. And we had an on-site internal meeting on March 30th. And substation engineering and line departments were all in this meeting to coordinate how we're going to do this project. It's not a real complicated project, but it's an expensive project just because of the transformer itself. Project cost is estimated $5.5 million. That transformer's $4.5 million. So it just shows you, it's not a huge project, but it's an expensive project just because of the transformer cost. We expect to have that online January of 27. So it's not going to take us but 2 months to do. And I'm going back here to the slide. That transformer is going to replace this one right here. And so that transformer's got to be moved off the pad. The pad's got to be wrecked out, and a new pad's got to be installed in place, because we are going to it's going to take a larger pad, and then we're going to put oil containment so that we don't have to worry about oil leaking out into the ground if it ever happens to leak. It's taken care of. It's contained in a containment. And that's kind of the new way we're doing all our transformers now, is putting a containment around it. And so,
what's going to happen with, what is this, a 75?
This one's a 120. Yeah, the one that's there now is existing at 75. Mm-hmm. We're going to put it on the pad just next to it. There's a pad there. And that pad is designed to add a third bank. Okay. And so it's going to be a spare in case anything happens to either one of those two transformers. And hopefully someday we'll actually energize it and make a third bay out of that 138 bay. And that is my presentation, unless you have questions for me.
Thank you, Kevin. Scott is gone from administrative services today, so Stephen is going to give that report.
I'm not as dapper as Scott, but I do like to stand up and
intend to make this as short and sweet as possible.
So this is a cybersecurity report. To start off, we have our cybersecurity training. We were able to hit 100% this month. Scott and I, mostly Scott, he went through and made sure that on the back end things were looking well enough, that making sure everybody's management and supervisors were getting email notifications for those that they are underneath, to make sure that they're aware if they have to do training or not. So hopefully that'll mean that we'll keep that trend. Lesson learned, phishing is getting smarter with AI, as you probably are aware of. AI fixes a lot of cool stuff and makes it harder for us too. Cybercrime is organized like a company, and people are still the biggest risk. That will probably not change. So our internal fishing results, we had zero for this month. We hope to keep it that way. Going to our emails and spam, for March we had 3,500 emails go in and out, and for our spam we had 4,700. So we're keeping kind of stagnant. I kind of hope that stays the same. Hopefully that means that Gmail is keeping track of things and our technology is keeping those things at bay. For our viral blocks by country, something that you probably would suspect, Russia has finally hit the top again. For a little while, they were down towards here near Germany. And for some reason, Canada, our bordering friends over there, decided to look at some things. Server system uptime, still 100%. We'd like to see that. Our data backups, we did have a dip down towards the end. This was because of a licensing issue. And also, just to give you kind of a preface of how this kind of works, even though these are individual jobs, we have over 10 to 15 to up to 20 different servers in those jobs. If it fails, that may not mean all of them didn't get backed up, but we want to know if any one of those jobs, any one of those servers didn't back up, it's considered a fail. So even though that is dropped down to zero, we did still have some servers actually get backed up. But we have fixed the problem, and hopefully it'll stick for a little while until we have license problems. They've increased the price, so we're having internal discussions on if we're going to keep with our current virtual infrastructure, but we'll deal with it what we have right now. For EISAC, is everyone pretty aware of what EISAC is? Okay. We saw 147 emails from them. I expect, obviously, with the climate that we're in right now, we'll probably see more of that. I hope it will go down as tension in Iran subsides. So obviously some of those things are still the top up there is physical attacks, as we've seen across the United States. Still, of course, phishing and vishing, which is texting, social engineering. Social engineering is the part where they say here, where they call and they act like they're an actual person. They actually talk to them, try to trick people into giving information that they shouldn't have. And then cyber exploits, this is expected with on the edge, so that's your firewall, stuff that's touching right at the cusp of the internet.
Vishing, I'm not familiar with that term.
Vishing is the text message version of phishing. So probably a common one you've seen is probably from FedEx or UPS, hey, you have a package,
okay.
We held it, that type of stuff. Or hey, we have... You might get an email or a text message saying, hey, your password was changed, but you didn't click on this link, which then forces you to go to their website, that type of situation.
Thank you.
Something that we do annually is our PCI compliance. I have gone through with our company that handles that side and have found this. We are compliant again for another year. We also do quarterly scans that are required for this compliancy. So if those fail, we're technically out of compliance, but the yearly audit has been done and taken place.
Good job, Stephen.
And have any questions? Okay, the next slide is actually for Chrissy. So let her go over that.
Felix asked me to talk to you guys about our emergency management partners and that we actually have plans in place if there is an actual emergency, a terrorist attack, or we've even had hurricane issues that we've had Clark County involve us in. So the first group that we're a part of is the Virgin Valley Emergency Management Group, and that is under the direction of Chief Andrus with the Mesquite Fire Department. We have biannual meetings with them, and they usually have someone from the staff of Clark County Emergency Management attend those as well. We're a part of the Moapa Valley Emergency Managers Group, which is under the direction of the Chief Neal of Moapa Valley Fire District. We have biannual meetings with them. And the Clark County Emergency Management is under Chief Samuels with the Clark County Fire Department. And the Web EOC is a place, if we have a system-wide outage, where there's going to be issues with people obtaining fuel between us and between Vegas and Arizona, that we can reach out to them. They will get NDOT involved, put signs out to let people know that there is no fuel availability and to make sure that you do that in Las Vegas. They also have, if we put out a Web EOC, they will roll out emergency services for us. They've offered reefer trucks in the past for the grocery stores. They've offered fuel if for some reason OPD5 doesn't have fuel for their trucks. And so those are good contacts to have when we do have these emergencies. The newest group that we're a part of is Las Vegas Metropolitan Police Department. They reached out to us in, I think, September of last year. They wanted to do a meet and greet. They came out. It was very successful meeting with them. We were able to get in-house training for See Something, Say Something. They will come out and do active shooter training and those things for training internally. We're also part of two groups there. That's under Jody Carl. She's a senior analyst for the Metro Police Department. We're a part of a critical infrastructure and key resources group. In March, I went to a tabletop exercise there. It was a drone scenario in a substation. They had all the key partners there, NV Energy. We were there, and I want to say Valley Electric was there because they do have some of their equipment is in the Clark County area. That was very it was very interesting. They had emergency management there. They had the police department there, the detectives, the street officers. They had parks and rec people there. They had the ambulance there. So it was a full-on explanation of what everyone would do and what their roles were. They had the National Weather Service there for monitoring winds and things like that with that drone. And so Melissa and Kyle were not able to attend that meeting with me. Most of the meetings, Kyle and Melissa both go with me. That one was one that just I attended on my own since they couldn't be with us. The other group that we're with, along with that critical infrastructure and key resources group, is that they've been sending us incident reports. So we've been getting cybersecurity alerts out of China, Iran, things that are happening through the police department is releasing this information to us. When they had the attack on the substation out near Boulder City, we had received an email from the police department before it ever hit the news. So that's a good group to be in because we're getting insider information. The other group we're involved in is the Utility and Pipeline Coordinating Group, and they are having quarterly meetings there, and Kyle and I both attended that meeting in March as well. So we are getting critical resources, making those partnerships, and having those face-to-face conversations and knowing who you're working with when we do have an emergency. And that's all I have to report, unless you have a question.
Clark County Emergency Management.
Yes.
Web EOC, they don't have physical meetings together with you. You have to log on through the web. You need the internet.
Well, they come into the Virgin Valley and the Moapa Valley emergency groups, but their reporting agency is based on the web. And so with our generators, usually in our office and our, what is it, Stephen, that we have? Do we have Skylink or something like that now?
Yeah, and self-service and yeah.
I do have phone numbers to call them if we need help that we don't have availability on the internet. But anytime they've had any kind of a critical event, even with Las Vegas Metropolitan Police Department, when they have the F1 races, anything that they feel could bring terrorists into the area, they have sent out a list of contact information for whoever's on call during those events.
Sounds like the police department is doing a little more than the county.
And I do have direct contact with Chief Samuels. I do have his direct cell phone number, so we do get help assistance if we need.
I think Chief Neal has retired.
He has. He has already moved to Henderson and is retired from the fire department.
Okay.
Well, it'll be good for his predecessor to then, or his successor, I should say, to hold the next meeting.
Yes, and we will get with him. I knew that there had been an interim kind of guy, but then he had left and Chief Neal came back. So staff changes quite frequently. Usually I deal with their office staff because they know where to find who I need. And that's all I have to report today.
Thank you, Christy. Okay, Jonathan, let's talk finances.
All right, let's do it. So last month, finance department was excited and recovering and rejoicing and everything from the audit. So we're
I thought it was from your birthday.
That too. And actually yesterday, there were some of us that attended a Dixie Power holds their statewide, their UREECA, Utah Rural Electric Co-op Association. They have an accounting conference that we attend regularly. So there were six of us that attended a training that was held on Monday, and then six that attended the training on Tuesday, and then three of us stayed for the conference. The trainings were on developing standardized costs and the work order, an overview of the work order process. And so since we have a new individual and Heather, who's our new work order clerk, we thought that'd be beneficial for her and well, the rest of us. So
it had been a pretty riveting conference, I would say.
Listen, it's a good time, Randy. You don't know it, but us accountants can have some fun.
Sorry, I missed out.
Yeah.
So yeah, it was great, and then yeah, I had the conference was great afterwards, and we're grateful to be there. And I mean, for us, other than Dixie Power, we're the closest people that, the closest neighboring utility that goes to that, even though we're not part of their organization. But. So, happy to report for March, our net margins were very favorable, but our revenues, we'll start there on line one. We were at $4.1 million. This was right around $200,000 higher than what we budgeted, so happy to report that. Our cost of purchase power was $2.4 million. We were slightly under $200,000 more than what we budgeted also. And our total cost of service on line 20 was $3.8 million. We had interest received on investments, almost $26,000. And then our net margins for March were $361,000 almost. And I know a lot of y'all, Randy and Randall, and you know, kid about what's presented and how some of this is boring or whatever, but there are some things that we've gone back and forth.
It was incompetence, Jonathan. Come on, man.
About what we report and what we don't, but we have policies and procedures that we are obligated to report on this. So.
I have a question for you. What line is that? It's line 7. That's like the lion's share of the difference. What is the maintenance of distribution expense?
Yeah, good question, Chad. So the budget is a year-to-date budget number. Line 7. And are you talking about the difference of the 953 and the 219?
And the 663.
Oh, 663. Yeah. So that was actually mostly in this month. So this was basically, we went back and looked to see why our budgeted, our budgeted amount for this month, we had a margin of 167. And so we're like 200,000 over what our budget was. And it's basically tied to that right there. So we had took our that expense from what we paid last year and tied it for March, and then for the budget when we allocated it. And then when I went and looked at it to see why we were off, those expenses that we had in March, we thought we were gonna have those again, those specific expenses in March. And so when I did the budget, that's what they were. But really, that amount through the whole year, or that amount should have been annualized through the whole year instead of just in March. So we captured those expenses on the budget for this month, but they should have been annualized for the whole year. So it reflects in March But at the end of the year, it will be, it's not going to change. But that $200,000 should have been annualized throughout the whole year. But, good question. And there were also some, expenses and some of the revenue, not in the cost of service revenue, operating revenues that were, should have been annualized also. Basically, it was contribution and aid was the other one that contributed, not to that line, but to some of our others. Our contribution and aid was actually recorded last year. We're trying to get that more on a regular basis, recorded quarterly instead of just whenever it comes in. And so our contribution and aid increases our revenue or increases our margins also. And so we're trying to record that systematically at the end of each quarter.
Can I add to that?
Contributed to that.
So when we have, say, a substation in, I'm sorry, not substation, subdivision closes, we have a contribution and aid that we record. And for many, many years, just when the subdivision closed, we recorded it. Jonathan has this crazy idea that he wants to know what's coming when. And so he's making those entries now instead of every time a subdivision closes, that quarterly we'll record all of the contribution and aid, and so that it helps with budgeting. But one of the things that happened last year was that a large amount came in, and so that was put on this budget, and he's wanting those to be annualized. So he's just trying to move that out. The other piece that I want you to talk about, Jonathan, is line 16. Why is there such a difference on your interest on long-term debt?
So we were anticipating that we needed to borrow by this time already $18 million, and we have only borrowed $8 million. So we had...
Oh, thanks to Randall.
Randall said so much money.
Yeah, he said
you welcome Randall. Wow.
You, it makes up for you insulting his reporting.
You should be sending you.
So that's where it is. We were anticipating that much, and so our interest expense is way lower than what we were anticipating at this time.
That's a good thing.
And it also, we were thinking that we were going to have to use some in and out, use some of our investments. So on line 22, our budgeted amount there is $50,000 for our interest income, and it's a little bit higher, $77,500
to it,
because we haven't had to get into it.
So.
We're stretching our investments as long as we possibly can, and we're holding our draws on our debt as long as we possibly can. And so I want to make sure that Jonathan gets recognized for that, because he works very hard at monitoring that cash. Yes.
I apologize. I'm sorry. Jonathan, I'm sorry.
So we're at, if I can get this pointer to work here, we are at year to date, it's going right here, for our year to date margins, $1.4 million, and we're budgeted at 8.9, so happy to report that. I was going to show January's. We talked about we were still receiving some trued up power costs for January. So those, we thought it would be better to just tie those. We received those trued up power costs, but they were tied into February's statement. So January's didn't really change much. We had a $47,000 loss was our budget. Our actual was right around $120,000 loss. But then in February, our budget was where were we for February? We were at a, $770,000 net margin, and it ended up being $1,183,000. So the majority of that power cost was shifted to that month, which increased our margins above our budget in February, $413,000. And this month, it's going to be right around $200,000. This power cost right here includes estimates. We estimated high. We had better estimates. since our financials are due last week, but this number will go down at least $150,000. Our actual estimate is $150,000 less than this, so it should be around $500,000 for our margin this month.
I told him that you guys know that our power costs are estimated, but he's so proud of that half million, he had to tell you guys tonight. So good job, Jonathan. You've done good.
Thank you. Any other questions with the statement of operations? Okay. Onto the balance sheet. We'll start on the asset side here. We have a total, I don't know how this got stuck on at this thing here, but
it's a button on that.
I'm cooking.
Without fail, just turn it on and off real quick.
Yeah.
Okay. So we are at $168 million in our net utility plant, which is line 5. We have our on line 8 investments and associated organizations, then our line 15 cash, line 18 temporary investments, line 23 materials and supplies, with a total asset value of $195.8 million. Hmm. Then on the liabilities and equity side, our line 36, we have $133.7 million in our equity. And then our line 43 long-term debt, line 48 accounts payable, and then our line 57 total liabilities of $195 million. Modified debt service coverage, this is estimates through the end of the year, since our margins are above actual. We have 2.09, which our goal was 1.87. That's what we budgeted. So we're slightly above that, and hopefully that will continue to remain throughout the year.
Okay, I have a question about that.
Yes, sir.
Reading the contract you got, they mentioned specifically DSC, and they list all the items, and that's what we're supposed to be comparing against. But ours says modified.
Yeah.
What's the modification?
Yeah, the modification is an adjustment to the revenue. So DSC, it's a different formula. So if
that's required for our loan covenants, why don't we report that? Why are we reporting this? I mean, this doesn't mean anything to us, does it?
Well, this does. The modified, my understanding was the modified is what they, I don't know if they used to look at modified, and they're doing both. Mm-hmm. I mean, in the actual contract, yeah, it's just DSC.
Shouldn't we change to what the covenant requires, because that's what we're supposed to live up to?
If we want that presented each month, then we can do both.
What do we need this for?
So the difference is in the calculation is that it takes out returns on capital credits, which typically come from G&Ts, which we don't fall under. Our old loan covenants were that you had to have a 1.25 for debt service coverage and a 1.35 best of 3 years for modified debt service coverage. We can start reporting debt service coverage if that's the one that they listed in here. That's the exact same calculation. You just take out a piece for those refunds.
It seems like that might be wiser now that they've changed their requirement.
Yeah.
But why don't you guys look at
it? We've always been required to meet both. We've always been required to meet both. It's just a different calculation of the same numbers. But we'll start posting DSC instead of MDSC.
We'll look it over and see what you guys.
Okay. Good question. I noticed that too, and actually Baron and I talked about that when we were reviewing our contract with the loan. So equity is a percentage of assets in 68% times interest earned ratio. This is a year-to-date amount, so we're above where our goal is, because we're above our actuals are above our budgeted amount. And then our total cash and checking accounts there is in the middle towards the top, $4.5 million in the bold. And then on the Morton account, we did some different things there this last month. So our balance in the Martin accounts, 5.5 7 million, and then we moved quite a bit into the Goldman account for liquidity. We didn't know when some of these projects were going to be due for payment, and when the loans and that were coming through, they had these assets matured, and so we were advised to move that over there. You know, the rate is a little bit lower. We would have to reinvest reinvest those into CDs, and actually right now the CD amounts were not quite as favorable as the ones that we still have in there, so that's why we moved that for, but it was mainly for liquidity.
I notice at the bottom you made $25 for the whole year.
Yeah,
we've had a little tiny bit of money in there.
Yeah,
till barely.
There's only like $4,500.
It's brand new to have cash in there.
So we moved that at the very end of March. So we haven't received interest income on that yet in there. So
go to McDonald's.
We both
barely. Barely.
I could buy
your lunch. Maybe.
Maybe.
So here's the breakdown of our assets held in the Morton account by security type and the bar graph and the duration in the bar graphs. And then a list of all the assets there with their respective interest rates. We had a total amount of customers, 19,288 at the end of March, but continuing to grow there consistently. Then connection fees, we had 40, valued at $36,419 for March. Current billing arrangements dropped quite a bit for March, 4,524 with 34 residential customers and one commercial customer. Roundup program balances there. And then our, so I don't know if you noticed, but we're trying to do something to break out our station power customers and report them here. And so down on the last class, customer class, we actually included our customer, or our station power customers there. So we included three of them. That includes the two new customers for this year. And then we went ahead and started reporting the one prior that we had ongoing. So that's our revenue by customer class. And then we, our totals that are in averages at the bottom. And so we actually backed those customers out of the averages down here at the bottom. So these figures for January, February are changed slightly to not include those since they're on separate contracts. So they don't affect our overall averages for cost and revenue. So those are an accurate reflection of the customer classes with the rest of our customers. So we had a favorable March. Our power costs were low. We had quite a bit of hydro allocation. We had more solar. And then our power costs, we had less energy sold in March than in January and February. And for our customers, that's an inverse number. So the less, basically the less that we sell, the more, basically the more expensive it is by kWh. So that's the reason why it's not. So, and that concludes my presentation, unless you have any. My order got messed up. These are the balances in our CFC loan. So it includes the additional $3 million that we took, and so that includes all of the total amount of loans that we have borrowed. And that interest rate's a little bit higher. We opted for it a 1 year longer in the repricing, and we talked a little bit about that last board meeting. But
But it says the maturity date is, okay, 2055.
We did it for a 25-year loan.
Okay.
Instead of 30.
For future borrowings, we will be pushing those repricings out further. We'll have these ones that will have an option in 27, 28, and 29 to either reprice or pay off. And then we'll give ourselves some time to save some capital and then make those decisions again so that we will not have every year with a repricing, because the ability to save enough money to pay off one of those in a year is limited. So Jonathan has been working on coming up with different debt structurings of how we'll do that going forward.
So you might have some that are 5 years out.
Yeah, or 10 or 15. We'll sprinkle those throughout the life of those loans.
And you only get to do it once, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm. So then you have the option. You either lock it for the remainder of the term at the rate at that time, or you can pay it off without penalty.
Right. Or you can, let's see, you could reborrow, right, at a lower rate.
If it's lower, yes. If it's lower, then you get to lock it, and if it's not, you reprice it at whatever the rate is at the time of the repricing, or that's your one option that you can pay it off early without penalty.
Without penalty.
Yes.
Good.
Yeah. Right now, these loans, the year to date, they're all above six. They're like 6.5, and so we made the decision to do the repricings. If we fix them to maturity, they're at six, around 6 and 6.5. When we did them.
Right now?
Yeah. That, and when we did these ones, and so that's
I thought we borrowed their 5.21.
Yeah, so that's with the option of repricing it. So if we didn't reprice it and just did a fixed amount to the term of the loan, the interest rate was higher. It was like around 6.5. Mm. That's why we opted to do the.
So we're hoping something favorable happens with interest rates. If it doesn't, then
yeah,
we lost.
Is the Fed chairman replaced next month, right, May?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that concludes my presentation.
Thank you, Jonathan.
It's nice that you guys are still sitting there. See how they're going.
We don't have a choice. Melissa put us in.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. I want to say happy tax day. I'm assuming that all of you are in order and you're here so that it isn't, you shouldn't be in with your accountant today. I have a few people that I want to get to introduce. I have Alonzo, if you will please stand up and introduce yourself to the board. And Alonzo, will you tell them how long you've worked for Overton Power? What your current position is, and what level of schooling you completed this year in 2026.
I'm Alonzo Martinez. I've been with Overton Power 3 years in June. I just finished my first step as a apprentice sub tech.
Thank you. We are working so proud of you.
Yeah, yes. Work here in Mesquite. Out of Mesquite, yeah.
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay. And next we have Leighton Woods. Leighton, will you tell them how long you've worked for us, your current position, and where you're at in your schooling?
Yeah, so I'm Liam Woods. I've been employed here for about 4 years, I guess just over 4 years. I just barely finished my second step in the apprenticeship, so right now I'm a third step apprentice.
And what field do you work in?
I work for the line crew here in Mesquite.
Yes. And then lastly, we have Mr. Klunker. And public speaking is Jared's absolute favorite thing, and so we're going to make it quick. We're going to make it quick. Jared, tell them how long you've been here, what you do, and where you're at in your schooling.
Jared Klunker, been here about the same time Layton is, just over 4 years. Journeyman substation tech now, and I work here in Mesquite.
So he just finished his apprenticeship. What month did you guys graduate? March or March?
Beginning
so.
Of March.
He went through the entire program and is now a full journeyman, so we want to say congratulations. We're so proud of these guys. They work hard, and we've talked about the schooling they go to, but it's wonderful when you get to see them. And I wish that what we need to do is have their wives and girlfriend come and visit and say what life is like and what they've gone through with this program. So.
Girlfriend.
Sorry.
Girlfriends?
Maybe.
When do you have time?
I'll say the other people in their lives. How about we just say that?
They're partners. Huh?
Yes, they're partners. There we go. These are some of the meetings that I attended this month since I saw you guys last. One of the things that I got to do that is always incredibly rewarding, I got to go and participate at Career Day at the Mesquite, the Virgin Valley Elementary School. And, you know, I can talk in front of strangers and adults all day, but you put me in front of a room of kids, and I was sweating. I was so nervous. You never know what they're going to ask. One little guy raised his hand and said, "How much do you make an hour?" And I just thought, oh gosh, this is going to be far harder than I was expecting.
I was a finance person.
And then one little girl said, "Do you ever get to have any fun at your job?" I must have made it sound very boring. And then a little guy that my kids know, my kids are here in this classroom, but you just can't see them. They were over to the side. They got to sit in special seats because their mom was presenting. And I know this little boy, Marcus. He said, "So electricity is required to run in a closed loop." And I thought, dear Lord, this is like, are you smarter than a fifth grader? And I know I'm not. And that, you know, so he was talking to me about what equipment do we have if we've overgenerated. And I thought, oh, thank goodness, I can answer this. So we had a very good conversation. And one little girl told Adeline, my fifth grader, "Your mom's as smart as Marcus." It was so fun. We talked about what do we use electricity for, what do we do during a power outage, electrical safety. It was such a fun morning. I'm really thankful. I also was asked to speak by a private women's group called PEO. They asked me to come in and speak about my career path and work-life balance, which I thought was funny, a funny topic for me at this point in my life. But that was a nice honor, and I had a great time. But I also sold each of those ladies on signing up for e-bill and auto pay and get text messages and all of the things. And then we're going to talk in just a minute about the light oscillations, and three of those women reached out to me yesterday about our light oscillations, and I thought, why did I share my card with all of you guys? Now everybody's calling me anytime there's a power issue. So so Cody talked about the scenario that we ran, and when we ran our scenario, I love doing tabletop exercises with the staff. When we did that scenario, Omar put up onto the screen a picture that was similar to this, and it had a drone going into a substation and said, okay, a drone's hit, what would we do? Those tabletop exercises are so valuable because each person comes from such a different perspective. And one of the things that really stood out to me is that when I think of a drone landing in our substation and causing an outage, I picture my son and one of his toys, and it just errantly flies away. But Jared, who has military background, immediately went to, should we have our staff rush to on scene? Should we be patrolling the perimeter of our substation? He went to a much, I'll say darker place, right? Is that fair? Okay. I hadn't really considered that, you know, that do we instantly believe that those things could be terrorist attacked, and then how do we prepare for that? And so we had a great, great conversation. We included everybody in the company. What would we say? How does customer service respond? What does finances role do in that? It was very good. So that was on Thursday. The following Monday, at about 6:20 in the morning, I received a text message, and it just said the word substation, and I received the picture on the right. And I felt like I could get sick. I just thought, oh my gosh, you know, we just went through this scenario. And then I got the next picture on the left, and I realized that it was from my brother-in-law who lives in northern Nevada, and I recognized the mountain behind that, and I'm like, that's Gonder Substation at Mount Wheeler Power. So this is a shared substation that is co-owned with NV Energy and Mount Wheeler Power, and this is actually the NV Energy portion of that substation, and one of their transformers is there engulfed in flames. I reached out to their general manager and offered mutual aid and said, if you need us, we'll get trucks rolling immediately. And so they actually, I got another picture that I didn't share that was from the other angle. My brother-in-law happened to be driving to work in the dark when he took that. And then another one, I could see lights in the background. And so I knew that they still were within power. Mount Wheeler did not have any outage as a result of this. None of their infrastructure was damaged. It was all on the NV Energy side. That transformer feeds the 345 line. And so they are having they have had transmission constraints as a result of that. Jack and I traveled to NREA's meeting last week with them, and NV Energy was in the process of bringing a replacement transformer over. They have not done all of the investigation to see why that transformer failed the way that it did. But as we've talked through this, this is our second greatest fear, right? Our first greatest fear is always injury to staff or to the public, and our second is losing a transformer in a substation. And so I'm thankful that we do those desktop exercises, that we talk through these things, and that we feel like we would be, okay, now this has happened, what would we do in this situation? And Kevin and his team have reported to me all of the things that would happen and how we would backfill those needs. And so this is scary, but nobody was hurt. And it wasn't our local neighboring utilities. It was NV Energy. And so they have the equipment that they can get it fixed quickly. And at this time, when we talked with them last week, they did not believe that this was a terrorist attack, that it was failed equipment. So I was asked to attend a meeting with one of our local politicians, asked me to come and join in a conversation that was in regards to data centers in the state of Nevada. When I got on the call, it ended up being the Governor's Office of Economic Development, and it was all of the economic development personnel from all of the local cities in southern Nevada, Henderson, North Las Vegas, Las Vegas. There was representation from Mesquite. It was interesting to me at listening to all of them talk. When you wear an economic development hat, you see things through the lens of tax, right? And so two things. I tried to be quiet because I was just the guest that was asked by somebody who was supposed to be on there just to let them talk. But after about the fourth time of them talking about that they needed to visit with NV Energy about the energy portion of what data centers being served in Nevada would mean, I couldn't take it anymore. I had to jump in there. And so I talked with them a lot about tax abatements, the amount of times that we are being talked to by data centers, and that it, to me, right now, it does not appear that the state of Nevada needs to incentivize data centers to come to us. They want to come anyway. And so we talked through that. I talked to them. The other thing that finally made me have to raise my hand and discuss with them is that most of them felt that if there is an energy, if there's an issue with energy, that most of it should be fed by renewable energy, and so they all went to solar. And so that group, I educated on the landmass that's required to put solar to feed an entity that is, like, a rough number is for every megawatt of solar requires between 5 and 7 acres of land. And so if you're thinking of a 10 megawatt data center, that doesn't seem like that much solar needs to put. If you're talking about a 1,000 megawatt data center, that's an incredible amount of land. In addition to that, data centers want to run 24/7, 365, and so they also need a gas plant that's about 25 acres that needs to go beside that. And so we had a very good discussion about that. I did report that back to the group at NREA, and as luck would have it, when Jack and I attended the meeting in Ely, the director of that group, I think I did, the director of the Governor's Office of Economic Development was scheduled to be on our agenda. And so we got to have a nice visit with him. Again, I drove home and reminded him that we are wildly different from an investor-owned utility, and that there are 11 utilities in the state of Nevada, and only one of them is an investor-owned. The remainder of us are rural, not-for-profit utilities. And so we had a very good talk about that, and I think that we'll continue to have a good relationship with him so that we're made a part of all of those talks. Because ultimately, what are they looking for? They're looking to put together a bill to get the governor to put forward on economic development. And so there has to be an energy component and discussion in every one of those discussions. And so I want to make sure that NREA gets to stay front and center, and our executive director, Lisa, will ensure that that absolutely happens. We had Alita Cabellas, and she was from the USDA. She's actually appointed by President Trump. And so she came and talked to us about their financing and the NEPA permitting reform that has been happening so that we can get through permitting quicker. One of the things that was discussed with her and her cohorts was that USDA does offer lower rates than most of their competitors, which would be CFC or CoBank. The offset to that is that they have incredibly cumbersome paperwork that's required. You do a lot of paperwork to apply for the loan. Their loans are handled a lot like a construction loan, where you do the work and then you submit for reimbursement, and it's incredibly time-consuming and costly. So she did acknowledge that they know that and they are working on that. I would love if they could get that refined a little bit, then we could maybe go for a USDA loan. One of the things that we have to consider in that is we would lose our 100% borrower designation with CFC. So the rate has to offset the loss of those discounts. And so we're always looking at that, but right now that it's not an option for us because one, the paperwork takes so much time. Anything that I would save in interest, I would pay in staffing to get through the paperwork. So, but also it has to be enough that it helps us on all of our current debt with that discount. So David Dashlick, he is the Infrastructure and Policy Director for Governor Lombardo. He was interesting. I don't necessarily know, and Jack, maybe you can add to this. I don't know what David came to tell us except for that he wanted to have a relationship with the rural electrics. And the thing that I spoke to him a lot about is reminding the governor the difference when we're talking about legislation of an investor-owned utility versus a not-for-profit rural utility, especially when it comes to wildfire liability. That if we put a cap on liability, and let's say, you know, they say $50 million. Well, if a $50 million cap is put on wildfire liability and we hit that threshold, our ratepayers then have to go and pay for that. They have the ability, NV Energy has the ability to get different insurance than a rural utility does. And so just keeping that relationship and making sure that the governor is aware of our differences. The governor has stopped on his rural tour at 3 utilities now. He met at Harney Electric, Mount Wheeler, and Valley Electric. He will be making other rural tours, and they have assured us that they are one of the tours stops is going to be with us. And so we just want to stay front and center with them, because for many, many years when you went to the legislature, it was very much like this go-ed call. They didn't even know that there was other utilities out there. And now we're being included in much more of those conversations. And so it's just important that we do that. Cammie Kincaid came from the Nevada Office of Emergency Management and Homeland Security. 2 really important things came from that. She came to talk to us about tabletop exercises, and one of the things that was funny, Jack had to step out of the room for just a minute, and she said, does anybody here run tabletop discussions? Do you do emergency planning? Do you do scenarios? And I raised my hand and I was the only general manager that did. And I said, just a second, my boss is coming. Can you ask me again when he sits down? And so everybody's quiet and Jack sits down and she's like, does anybody offer tabletop exercises? And I'm like, I do. Jack didn't even know that we had totally set him up. Like, wait, pause. He's almost here. So the other thing that came from that though, as we talk through wildfire liability and legislation, one of the things that they've talked about is that your wildlife mitigation plan, everything that you have to have in there, who you submit that to, if we're going to submit that to the PUC, then do we open the door for them to have oversight of that plan? And so that's been a big topic of controversy within our group. And CAMI now has indicated that as a portion of the Department of Homeland Security, they could receive those fire plans and offer some insight on that. And so that was really good. Two things. They also have a website that gives tabletop exercises so that you can run through those. And so we'll start using her office some more. And they're actually going to come and speak at our annual meeting as well. And then Faye from the Governor's Office of Energy, she just came to, she called in and she gave a grant update on all of our reporting. As you guys know, we have to start reporting this month. Even if you haven't taken any money, the moment that the money is released, every month you have to give your reports. All of those reports through Vernon, Jonathan, and Randall have been submitted on time, and we're doing good with that. And then the last guest that we have was Jimmy Hum. He is the new director for the Governor's Office of Energy. And he just took over for Dwayne McClinton. Dwayne just left, gosh, I would say maybe 2 months ago. And Jimmy was on his ninth day. So he just met us via Zoom. But we got the opportunity to tell him how grateful we were for the grant that his office had supplied. And he has already agreed that he's going to come to our next NREA meeting in person, and so that's a very valuable relationship, and we will continue to work on that. We received an update from Jesse Wadhams, one of our
lobbyists.
Thank you, lobbyists. As we prepare, Vernon and I will be going to D.C. in a couple of weeks for the D.C. fly-in and legislative conference, and so we got a good update from Jesse. And then this meeting, we had a long meeting. We were supposed to be out of there by noon, and we didn't even get to the possible actions until after lunch. And so they had Youth Tour Scholarship Committee as the only utility in NREA that does not send kids to the Youth Tour. We don't participate in that. We had a discussion on our RENPAC giving cycle for 2026. We discussed who we're going to give the D. Vernon Dalton Award to at our annual meeting. And in amongst that, they have now decided that we would give a Home Means Nevada Legislative Champion Award. So the D. Vernon Dalton Award is for people who have made a positive contribution to our industry within our group. But there has been a number of legislators who have really advocated on our behalf in the past. And so, but what we didn't want to do was necessarily give them the D. Vernon Dalton Award. And so they've come up with this Home Means Nevada Legislative Champion Award. So that was approved, that we will now be doing that. And again, that would be awarded at our annual meeting. And then the final thing is, we have now been asked to come and present at the Joint Interim Committee on April, I think it's 21st, I'm going, and this one is on wildfire, again, through Chairman Watts. And so Lisa, myself, and Dane from Lincoln County will be in Las Vegas, and then Kevin from Mount Wheeler and Thad from Wells will be going to Carson City to do those presentations. I just left this in here because I put my presentation out into the to the drive for you guys ahead of the meeting, and I know I already showed you this last month, but because this is important, I want us to keep this top of mind. We know that the forecasts for the river are very dire, and so I also shared with you guys each a opinion piece from Politico today on your email for you guys to read about what the president's staff is looking at doing on those releases from Powell. I received a call from someone who attends CRETA with us from another organization, and she said that she wished that I was taking a more active role in their meetings, that they appreciate my perspective, and I have missed a couple of those meetings. And so as we've talked last month about my attendance of meetings and how difficult it is to make all of those, as we sat down as a staff and talked about I haven't been making all of the CRETA meetings because of timing issues, but also just workload. As we talked about who could go to that, Randall has showed interest in going to those CRETA meetings. And Randall has went to CRETA meetings in years past with Mindus. And so in the next coming months, for the next 3 months, the CRETA meeting coincides with our board meeting. And so you will likely see that Randall will be absent from this meeting because he has agreed to start attending those meetings in person. With the hydrology the way that it is, I agree with them. We need everybody at the table making these decisions. One of the things that I wish I was there for the meeting, the Bureau of Reclamation gave all of the dire reports on how the hydrology is looking and then proceeded to say that they still felt like we should do our cold showers for the bass, those cold flow experiments at the end of 26 and early 2027, if you can believe that. And so I think they just needed somebody that was going to say, what the hell, in the meeting, and so they called me. But quite honestly, it's shocking that people could be making those kinds of decisions. And so we need to start advocating for ourselves a little bit stronger. This is a one-pager that was sent out from CRETA to talk about with our legislators. These are the things that we need to do. And I think that you guys saw that yesterday in the local paper, there was an article on my discussion that I had with you guys last month at the board meeting on the Colorado River. I want to give you guys as many of these things as we can, because as those things start circulating locally, you as board members are going to be approached about this. And so what do we want to see? We want to see them release some of those IIJA funds. One of the things that Celeste Malloy from Utah is pushing is, instead of releasing cold water out of the bottom of the dam and bypassing all of that hydropower, let's do a study on a thermal curtain that will keep the temperature difference and keep the bass down and protect the humpback chub. And so some of that money could be released for that study instead of just shipping water down the river. We need to protect both water and hydropower mitigation efforts. Fund the Whitehead turbines at Hoover Dam. The most recent update I have is that they have passed the agreement that the funds can be released of the $50 million, but the Bureau of Rec still has not. Here we are a month and a half later. They have not released the funds. And then we need to stop the Glen Canyon bypass experiments. And so this will be out there for you guys. And as our locals talk to us about our hydropower, we have to say we're advocating it on every level. We're doing everything we can, both federally and at the state, and then we're also participating in CRETA, and so we will be in those meetings and doing all that we can.
You said you sent this to us?
I sent an article from Politico today that came out, but I will send you this as well.
Yeah.
But all of these reports are in the shared Google Drive that each of you get the day before the meeting. You can go out there and look. And if you can't remember how to get into the shared drive, Stephen would love to give you an update. Yes. Okay. Yeah, we'll make sure that you have access to it. But so all of our reports, the pictures, everything are out there for you guys. And Mr. Lobb, you asked for that to be a day ahead, and I just want to make sure that you saw that we were a day ahead. Okay. Yes. Yesterday, you guys may have noticed that we had light oscillations or voltage oscillations across our service territory in the morning. Escape Solar had reached out to us and in conjunction with Lincoln, actually, and said that they would be doing some of their annual maintenance. And so they have, is it 3 or 4 days?
4
days of overnight maintenance that they will be doing, where they will de-energize in the evening, work all night, and then re-energize at about 7 a.m. When they re-energized, they had some issues with some of their maintenance, and so that actually ended up not happening at 7 a.m. It happened at 8. When they re-energized, we saw a small bump when they re-energized that large transformer. That's to be expected. But then it appeared as though that things were going fine. They weren't. As soon as their solar started to ramp on, we saw the light oscillations again. Kevin and his team reached out to them. Once they realized that the oscillations were going, that the system was not going to self-correct, while we were on the phone with them, they agreed to ramp down their solar, and the moment that they did, then those oscillations quit. Through their investigation, what they came to realize, remember when we talked about this before, their battery system was set up to be grid following. And so what happens in those situations is, and I'll just use numbers that are easier to digest, say that the system is at 20 megawatts, and then all of a sudden the system sees that it's at 2 megawatts. Well, it ramps up to meet the 20 that it's supposed to be at. Then it sees that it's overcharged, so then it drops down. And you see that crazy variance. With grid forming, the batteries smooth that. When they re-energized yesterday, their system did not reset to normal operation, and the batteries did not go to grid forming. Mm-hmm. And so they've now seen that. The other thing that Kevin reminded them, and following Byron's advice, after all of that happened, we sent them a report in writing of the conversations that we had with them, the times that we had it, and what we witnessed on our system. They then did agree that they had probably ramped a little too quick and that they would reduce that. They worked overnight again last night, and this morning we did not see the light oscillations, although they did ramp faster than they were supposed to, but they assured us via text today that they would do better. So they will continue to always be a bit of a challenge.
But do we get any fix? They found the error of why it didn't do the forming and it shouldn't happen again.
So they re-energized today and we did not have that issue.
Okay, supposedly we
have. Yeah. Yeah. We did not have that issue as of today. So
did we hear any problems people had? I know I heard about light flickering.
We had a lot of reports of light flickering. We received one report from our local hospital because they had people on the table in the OR and they were the staff of the hospital called it brownout characteristics, but again, they were seeing those oscillations. And so when they spoke with Christy, she directed them to switch to generator power. They did. They were able to keep everybody safe. And then they moved back to grid power when we told them that things had been straightened out with the generator. So that was the only real scary one that we had. I spoke with the CEOs of both of our local water companies. None of their wells tripped, and neither did any of our large CNI customers. So thankfully we didn't see that, but we did see the light oscillations across. People do see that in their homes, but where you really see it is where you have the banks of lights like this, like in our Overton building. It's quite interesting. Our new area, like by my office, you barely see it. But in the banks of lights that are outside Randall's office, you almost can't walk. It is like walking in a haunted house, like the strobing is so crazy. We have to shut those light banks off. I know at the rec center here in Mesquite, they have the same thing with those long banks of fluorescent lights. You just can't see. So,
how long was that event?
Just over 2 hours.
But it...
And it started at 8 a.m.
Mm-hmm. But it wasn't the normal where it's just a nonstop. You would see it, then it would go away, see it, and go away. And so we had a lot of people that are like, is that light going out? Then they would think it wasn't, and then you'd see a little flicker. And so it had definitely different characteristics than it did all the months ago. Like I said, it didn't kick off our CNI customers. So
I don't think it was quite as strong for whatever mm-hmm. reason. I mean, it was, you could tell down the hallways at the rec center, people definitely noticed it, mm-hmm. but 6 months ago, it was much worse.
Yeah.
So,
does that affect LED lighting? Because a lot of the
fluorescent lighting if we change the LED, which was totally different.
I think because in our office in Overton, it's an LED fixture, a fluorescent fixture that's been converted to LED, and I think those are the ones that are giving us problems the most. You see it the most. But I think the ones that are actually LEDs.
Originally,
I think they're a little bit more stable.
Yeah, I think so. Aren't the solar supposed to build out to 100 megawatts?
But they already are.
They're fully built.
They had planned to expand.
They originally, when we originally were talking with them, they were going to just build the solar, and then they were going to build out the remainder in about 2 years. They built everything at once. So they were brought on all at one time. Okay. Yeah.
So there's about 25 megawatts. Is that it?
That's what we receive. That's our PPA from them is 25 megawatts, but they're 185 megawatt.
Oh, okay. So they're fully built up.
They're 100% done.
That's what we're having.
Yes.
How much battery do they have?
It's 185 megawatts of battery that they...
The battery is actually 100 megawatts for 4 hours.
100 at 4 hours. That's right. What they had to ramp that down a little, right, Randall? Because they couldn't get all the capacity out of there. Mm-hmm. And then they have 70 of solar that they sell. 25 of that 70 comes to us. And the remainder travels on to the grid in Las Vegas. The last thing for my report, I gave you guys two handouts as we go to the DC fly-in. I just wanted to show you that we have the one pager that we'll be giving to all of our representatives from NREA, and then Vernon has also created one for Overton to share as well, and I just thought that was good info, so I shared those with you. I'm happy to answer any questions if you have any for me. If not, Mr. Chair, it's up to you.
Okay, very good. Let's go to I, review and possible approval of GM contract, possible action.
Stephen, would you pull up? Thank you. So, as you know, it is time for the renewal of my contract. Last month, in March, in executive session, you guys held my performance evaluation. And so I gave a brief overview of what it was that you guys discussed with me in that evaluation. So my first year was focused on stabilizing, aligning, and positioning for the future. And the topics of conversation were strategic planning and execution, safety and culture reset, government relations, financial discipline and rate stability, grants and compliance, professionalism and internal leadership, areas for improvement, and my priorities for 2026. And then I included my closing statements that I gave you in my presentation for my review. Stephen, if you'll now bring up the action item, please. I've worked with Byron on the contract, which was then shared through the attorney with all of you guys for review. That now has been posted, and so can you bring up the action?
The first page?
Yes. I'm happy to answer any questions or for you guys to have any discussion with Byron that you feel that you need to have, or you, if you are in agreement with the contract, then you could just propose a motion to approve.
Okay, we're looking for a motion.
I move we approve the contract as presented.
Excellent. We have a motion.
I'll second that.
Okay, we have a second. Everyone in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Very good. Wonderful. J.
Thank you.
Review and possible approval of CFC loan agreement. Other documents for CFC power loan.
Now that I have my contract done, I'm just going to turn everything over to Jonathan. So, Jonathan, if you will please take the discussion on the loans.
Okay, so this was, we have been discussing this for the past 6 months, I believe. And as a reminder, this was given out to all of you, and we approved the pre-application process to apply for this, and basically that's what this is a pre-approval for a loan. It's not to
pull the whole $36 million down, but it's a pre-approval to slate that, and then each borrowing that we take has to be approved by the board.
We'll all be under those rules.
I do have a question. The last three loans we've got are rather small, but they're really long-term. And I would just like a little bit more discussion about if they're going to be, you know, a $2 million loan that we don't do. We might consider not doing a 25-year loan on,
$2 million.
On a small loan.
Yeah.
That would be my only comment on the loan.
I'm in total agreement with you. As Jonathan and I have talked through this, I've told him that I would like a better reporting on debt structuring and for us to do a good discussion on that. One of the reasons that we've been taking these small pieces is because the rates are not super favorable, and so we don't want to lock in. The hard part about doing a short loan is that you then don't get to amortize that over the life of the infrastructure that you're spending the money on. And so you try to find that sweet spot of not paying interest for too long, but yet getting to amortize it over the life of the loan instead of recovering those payments in rates that would be much shorter. If we could get a better term at 10 years, that is great because it saves us on interest, but then our customers pay for a 30 to 40 year asset in a 10 year period. And so we're going to evaluate that. And as we come to you guys for those future draws, we'll have those discussions with you. So, but tonight, Jonathan needs for you guys to approve the signing of all of those loan docs. And then Jonathan, I think you physically need some of the board members to sign those docs. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. The chairman, Mr. Nelson, Ms. Young, and then
So if approved and we have a short meeting, you still have to stay and sign all the paperwork.
One of the things, the two things I noticed in it. One is there's no mention of the discount for 100%. That's not guaranteed. They could wipe that out at any time. Is that correct?
If we know.
No, I mean, it's not in the contract that if we maintain 100% loan that we get that discount for sure. But they could change their policy and say, we don't give it anymore. Is that right? It's not in the contract. I didn't see it in the contract yet. Very difficult reading all that, by the way, to say the least.
Yeah, indeed.
I'm going to say, honestly, Jonathan and I have been through far more loans than you. I don't know if... what I can tell you is that CFC is a co-op that is governed by a board of directors that we elect as customers or members, and so those policy changes would be directed by their board, and so we would have say on that. We have a representative for Region 9 that does the voting on those, but I don't know that contractually they're obligated to give us every one of those discounts. We'll check on that, but I don't believe that they can just arbitrarily decide to no longer give it to us. That would require board action, and we would have a say in those discussions.
A little tiny say, but yes, you're correct. But the other thing is, you're in your discussion about getting the dairy department's loan, I would wipe out, but they could, you know, getting a loan from the federal dairy, what is it?
The USDA.
Federal Federal Administration. Okay. That we would lose that discount, but we also could lose it by other action, I think.
We could lose it, but I think the likelihood is very, very slim, and I'll tell you why, because it's the thing that keeps CFC borrowers locked to being CFC borrowers. So if they did not offer those incentives, we would be shopping their competitors constantly. So...
And with this $36 million, back to Chad's point, I mean, when we draw a $3 million, $4 million, we have an opportunity to discuss that. And is there being an opportunity there to discuss the length of that loan?
So, Randy, what we would do is with every draw, we would bring to you and say, this is what we're going to use it on. And then you guys would direct Jonathan to say, give us information on how you're going to do this debt structuring. And what we hope is on our future projects, that we have that timed out a little bit so that we know and we take chunks as opposed to, you know, $1 or $2 or $3 million. Yeah.
I can tell you one of the concerns I had in reading this was, you brought up DSC, right? The debt service. And so I brought it to him because we've got a minimum requirement. And one of the things in the contract is we have to have a ratio above a certain number.
Right.
So my question was, well, if we took $36 million, are we going to be below that? And so he did all the math for me, and the answer is no. It's real close if we took it all at once, but we won't, right? And meanwhile, we're going to be paying down debt as we go as well. And so we will be able to stay above that DSC ratio requirement that's in the contract. And so that was definitely something I was concerned about, because we don't want to be in breach for being below or anything like that. Right?
And so what happens, and for those of us old timers that were here in 2008, we remember this. So that's me and you, Byron, and Kevin. We, CFC, if we do not meet our loan covenants, they have the ability to require us to raise our rates. They don't foreclose on our loan. They have the ability to come to you as the board and say, as the rate-setting entity, we require that you recover enough to make yourself back in compliance with those debt service coverages. And so that's the way that debt covenants work.
And that extra money goes to them.
Well, it's the, it's required so that you can meet those payments.
Your payments.
Yes,
yeah.
Your payments. Yeah.
You're just paying your normal payments, but they want to make sure we're secure and can make those payments.
Mm-hmm. How much did the math tell you could borrow and still be above the minimum?
I believe it was. Well, I can provide you exact, but I believe it was $40 million.
So we're close.
Yeah,
but that would be in 2026, and if you look at the
payoff,
how much we're going to pay off in 2028, that changes that drastically.
Actually, we only pay off about $4 million, don't we?
$4 million a year is what we're...
Yeah, and in 28, we only pay off $4 million. Each year we pay off $4 million, right?
Right.
But in 2028, more of our loans are...
A lot of the loans are...
Yeah, but we've taken out many loans, right?
But I'm just saying, if you took $40 million today, it's going to change it. If you spread the $36 million that we're asking for over 5 years, that debt service coverage number is not going to drop down to 1.125 immediately.
Because we will have paid it off, and so our debt service is, we're going to be doing this constantly,
yeah.
Right? And that keeps us below the margin of the
operation. Yet, if we get a short-term loan, that forces our payments up and lowers that number.
Yeah.
And we have to recover that in today's rates instead of over the life of the asset that we're using it for.
Well, I just looked at your part of $26 million. We dropped down to 59% equity. We're back to 68% equity today.
So
we're at the same spot before we borrowed the money at that equity ratio.
And we were in trouble before, too.
Well,
big trouble because we had to borrow so much money to pay off.
But that was 15 years ago.
Yeah, it's $50 million.
Mm-hmm. But you're talking about the $26 million that we made the decision to borrow, and we've already come back down to under $50 million in our borrowings.
Yeah, and our equity is back at 68%. So even as we go through and we borrowed, you know, this money again, it's going to drop us into the 50s. But in a very short amount of time, we're back to that 68% equity
in years. Years. Because we've been paying on those loans for.
So in 2028, in September of 2028, we have 8 loans that will be paid off. Each of those currently are just right under $1 million. So that all of that debt will be retired by September of 2028.
So between now and 2028, we'll retire around $8 million.
More than that, because the remainder of those loans, but those ones will be complete. Those ones will be complete. Yeah.
We drop 8.
Yeah.
Those
Just those loans.
Just those loans will be completed. The remainder of the loans that we have will continue to chip away at, but those ones will all be done.
Well, I'll make the motion to approve the contract.
Yeah, I'm looking for the staff and the wordage.
There you go.
I'll make a motion. We approve the loan agreement and other associated documents for CFC Power Vision Loan NB004B9004 as presented.
Second. Okay, we have a motion. We have a second. Everyone in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed? Okay, good. There's possible review and possible of hiring employees. Oh, of employee
policy
for hiring. Sorry.
Yes. Stephen, will you go down a page? As I looked at, you know, I'm trying to clean up some of these policies that you guys are going to hold me as the general manager to. And some of them have been funny because it was just simply changing the logo, the naming, the nomenclature of calling us OPD5 and adding she to the description for the general manager. Some of these are even smaller, but they're still pieces that I think are very antiquated. So if you'll go down one page, please. This one is for the hiring of employees, and originally it didn't even really describe the equal employment opportunity. And so I just put in the verbiage that should be there. And then, Stephen, if you will just open the clean copy.
Just keep going. There you go.
Is that the same one?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Will you go down? So now you can see that I've just cleaned that up. It's a very short policy, but it includes the oversight of the board, that we are an equal opportunity employer, and the conditions of the employee, conditions of employment. And so, and all of this was put out there for you guys to read ahead of time.
Is that something Byron needs to look at or do?
I have. I get them too. And so review them, and if I have questions or concerns, I'll reach out to Melissa and say, hey, this is a problem. I did not have a problem with this one and the changes.
Okay, so we're looking for possible action here.
I move we approve revision to the hiring employment policy.
Very good. We have a motion.
Second.
We have a second.
You guys are tag team today. We got one more.
Are we going to vote?
Everybody in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Okay, we're on to
same thing, very similar to what I just said, but this one was the same, was reviewed and approved in 2017, and I cleaned up the verbiage, and you can see what a short policy it is, but it does just discuss the authority of what authority I have to hire and who, and that you guys hold me to the other policies that have already been approved through temp workers and full-time employees.
Okay, I'll move we approve this one.
Good.
Okay. When aren't you going to
second? I'll be a second.
Okay, we got a second. Everybody in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Okay, public comments. Do you have anything in Overton? Trustee comments.
I just want to say, I know Randall took off on a little while, but I appreciate him taking Dell and I out and around a week or two ago for a couple hours. Saw some substations went out down in Overton in that area, went through the shop over there and kind of poked around, kind of keep an eye on the doors. But anyway, I just appreciate him spending the time with Dale and I for a couple hours that day. I just appreciate that.
Didn't show us the tortoise.
He didn't. But he gave you the GPS coordinates. So.
I think it's one of those hunt and search, Dale. So we have a little homework. Anyway, thanks.
Very good.
I'd just like to thank Byron for the work he did on the contract.
Yeah.
Melissa's contract, you know.
Getting it out to us.
Yeah, got it out. We have plenty of time to review that. Everything looked very good on it. Yeah,
very good.
Mr. Chair, I just remembered something I forgot from my report that I do want to tell you guys.
Okay.
I apologize. We have a data center that has reached out to us about moving into our service territory that Randall and his team have been meeting with. We signed an NDA with them a number of months ago, and I just wanted to give you guys an update that they have, or they have agreed this week that they are sending money, is that right? This week for a deposit for a study. And so we are moving forward with them. We're, of course, working in conjunction with Byron on that, and so we will be keeping you guys informed. That will still need to be an executive session, but publicly I can tell you guys that we are receiving the money to do a study so that they are taking one further step.
Well, has Nevada Power ever given us their study?
That study was scheduled to take between 9 and 12 months for us to receive, so no, we still have another number of months before we hear back from them. But we will do an internal study as well on what infrastructure would be needed on our side. And so we'll move forward with that once we receive that deposit.
I think the staff did an absolute terrific job at the fair.
Yeah. Yeah, that was fun.
I mean, it's really above what you usually see people to show that kind of effort by the staff itself, and the creativity was really rewarding. Terrific.
And we take a lot of time. One of the things that I really appreciate is that Cody and his entire team, as well as the office staff, all agreed to move their schedule. So those people who are typically scheduled Monday through Thursday work Tuesday through Friday, so that they were not paid overtime to go and work at the fair on Friday. And I thought that was very kind of them to show that kind of dedication. And my family and I attended both shows on Friday, and it's hard to say the same thing over and over, you know? I mean, to do the same show multiple times. Those guys were fresh, energized. They did an absolute incredible job. I'm very thankful.
Did you learn anything?
I did, and I'll tell you guys that my kids, when anybody, we say don't be an idiot, and we shouldn't say that in front of our kids, but now our kids say don't be a Freddy.
Yeah, I think having to rotate through and each one kind of being a spokesman makes a big difference on that.
Yeah.
Very good. Okay, approval for our next board meeting on May 20th at the Overton Board.
Chad.
I make that motion.
I won't second it.
Whoa!
Some other person moves. Okay, looking for a second.
I'll second.
Okay. There you go, Rich.
We have a motion. We have a second. Everyone in favor of the next board meeting?
Aye.
Very good. Any opposed? Okay, is there an executive session?
No, sir.
Hallelujah, brother.
Okay.
But there's not executive session.
Okay, we can go into executive session if you would like. I mean, they'll boo and hiss at you instead of me for once. So.
And again, you two will need to stay to sign
off. Mike and Jack, yes.
Well, have a motion to adjourn.
Could we adjourn?
Contract.
Motion to adjourn.
Motion to adjourn. And
I move that we adjourn.
Second. Everyone in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Okay. Very good.
Thank you. Is it good to go first and get it over with?
Leighton, did Casey and